This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
Never mind me. How are you doing?
Never mind me. How is the Champions League doing? It is on one.
It's pushing for the Europe's premier club competition.
It's pushing for it.
It's making a run.
What's happening to people? What's happening?
I don't know. First time listeners are going to be like, are these guys for real? Don't worry. It's a bit. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. This is the first of, well, I suppose two, technically three Champions League podcasts this week, if you include Righty's House. We're doing Tuesday night's games now. We'll also be doing Wednesday night's games tomorrow on Stadio, and there will be a Righty's House straight after Bayern Arsenal's. So today we're going to talk about, I don't know which way we're going to do them, but we're going to talk about Barcelona PSG and we're going to talk about Dortmund Atleti. But can I start with an email?
Yes, you can.
The title is Dortmund Atleti and My Son. And it's from Ben. Shouts to Ben. Ben said, Musa Ryan, I've long enjoyed the podcast and recently started listening with my son while driving to my son's soccer games. We live in the US. My son is totally soccer mad and we have really enjoyed listening together, which is lovely. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, it's delightful.
Anyway, I thought you would appreciate this quick story. We were watching the Dortmund Atleti highlights and having our minds blown. And at the end, my son turns to me and says, Musa must have gotten all of his vitamins from that game.
No way. No way. That is that is absolutely amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Thanks, Ben. Yes, that's a great email. Yes, he did.
Incredible. Yeah. I did.
Ben and son, shout out.
Listen, that game was nutritious.
Yeah. And we hope the football's going well over there. So
that's so cool. I love that.
There you go, man. I mean, to be fair as well, it was a common theme last night because a lot of people were just checking in to see how, you know, you were, how we were.
How's it doing? You know,
actually, goals and red cards are kind of all we want.
We definitely got them.
We got them. So I think we should get into it after this.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
All right, man. I'm going to put it to you. Where would you like to begin?
Barcelona.
You'd like to begin in Barcelona?
I'll tell you why. Because we got goals and red cards, I think we should start there. Because that game gave us everything. Everything.
Let's go for it. All right. So, give us the summary.
Oh, my goodness. Barcelona 1, PSG 4, PSG going through. And
6-4.
The summary being, going through 6-4, I suppose the summary being, I know it's a cliche, but the turning point, the red card of Araujo.
It was the turning point as well.
It was. Okay, if we're really nitpicking, we could say that the Lewandowski miss at 1-0, which makes it 2-0 Barcelona. Just in terms of the flow of the game, because Barcelona started really well. I mean, let me be fair to PSG. It was a good even exchange early on, but Barcelona took the initiative. Gorgeous opener. Well, a gorgeous assist by Lamine Yamal, who just isolated the mismatch and just drove into space. At 1-0, Barcelona looked as if they were really going to push on. The Lewandowski miss, dude. And this has been the thing. Like, he's, you know, I was talking about this in the group, like, late era Lewandowski, more of these misses have crept in. And this isn't because of a slackness or anything. It's just margins. The Lewandowski of 10 years ago, it's good night. I do think it's good night in a tournament, in a game of this variety. And the thing about the Araujo red card, and we're just going to sort of briefly focus on it. What's brilliant about this as a piece of forward play is the way that Barcola draws the foul. This is a really good example of drawing a foul where you're not selling
cutting it. Cutting across the defender.
You cut across the defender. What you do is really clever with that. Once you cut across the defender, you then make it into last man, because there is no way that Kubasi is getting across in time. The speed that Barcola is moving at when he touches the ball into the box. They were lucky it wasn't a penalty, but the red was, for me, it was like straight red.
I don't think it was a bad decision.
Yeah. I think they hung around because it was the disbelief. Fabian Ruiz was like, you're out of here, which didn't help matters. But you could see Araujo hang around, not because he necessarily disagreed, but he was like, he understood the enormity of it.
I mean, Araujo started doing the finger wag straight away, and I was just like, And then as soon as I saw Jules Koundé do it, I was like, he's definitely gone. I wouldn't even bother. Too many people wagging the finger, or if the finger wag comes too quickly, don't even send it to VAR. He's gone.
Dude,
the same thing happened with João Cancelo on the penalty.
Yes.
Before Dembélé had even hit the deck,
right,
João Cancelo was wagging his finger, and I was just like, don't even check that.
Actually, we'll get to the penalty because we'll put a pin in it because the penalty is interesting. And there's actually a whole 5 or 7 minute sequence when Barcelona lost this game.
Lost the second half. Completely.
Dude, the psychological disintegration, that, put it this way, Carlo Ancelotti does not melt down like that.
No.
That doesn't happen. And this is the thing, I suppose. I mean, but going back to that first half, so you have the Araujo red card, and then Dembélé, who has been booed throughout because obviously, like, you know, well, he's hated for just celebrating aggressively in the first, no, celebrating flamboyantly in the first half, and probably, let's face it, celebrating for leaving and producing very good form with PSG in crucial games, and Barcelona looking at him going, hang on a minute, you should have been like this for us all the time. But you see Dembélé getting into the game, and he gets that great, great, great finish. Barcola, again, dangerous in the first half, whips it across goal. Dembélé rips it high into the net. And so you go into halftime at 1-1. Now, one thing I want to mention about this game, the red card by Araujo that's so important. If you look at the possession breakdown, it's not only that it's 33% Barcelona at home. When are you seeing Pedri completing basically 20 passes in defensive midfield zone?
Shouldn't have played, I don't think.
Dude, this is, when you see played. That. No, that's fair. And also, like, if you look at, like, he's obviously not physically at his best, not a knock on him. But dude, in a Champions League second leg quarterfinal, for Pedri to be completing 20 passes in a team coached by Xavi.
If you're going to set up like that, protecting a lead from the first leg, and you're going to kind of absorb pressure, you don't start a midfield two of Frenkie de Jong and Pedri.
You don't.
I mean, it's easy to kind of criticise the selection after the fact, especially when Barca took the lead and had 11 players, while they weren't exactly like bossing the game, they weren't particularly uncomfortable, I don't think.
Here's a hot take. Should have taken Lewandowski off. They wouldn't have. He never would have. But you took off Barcelona's best player. You took off their main supply. You took off their outlet. This is the thing. If you're down to 9 players, and this is just a hot take, but if you're down to 10 players, who is your main outlet? It's clearly Yamal. He is the creator. We know that Rafinha scored twice, but he wasn't the primary playmaker. It's been Lamine Yamal. Look, it was him in the Copa del Rey against Athletic Club. Even in the most intense games, he is the go-to. He is the out. Take him off and you're inviting pressure. You're inviting pressure. Like constantly on the counter, that guy was constantly the danger. And what you do then is you have Rafinha, who's excellent, don't get me wrong, but you have Lewandowski up there and the pulse of the whole thing is different. The really, really bold thing would take Lewandowski off. I wouldn't expect, there's almost no coach in world football I'd expect to do that. But I think someone like a Pep does that. I really genuinely believe that someone like Pep takes off Lewandowski and just has the two wingers flying at you and then has Gundogan dropping in to form an extra midfield bank and then you just cook. Because what PSG did so brilliantly, and you saw it actually in the early minutes of this game, there was always a warning sign in these matches. The way PSG pressed Frenkie de Jong high up and he didn't like it. He's in space and he's turning and they can't get free. He can't get free. And I thought, they're hunting you. They're hunting you in key areas and places you're not expecting it. You see that in the second half. So we get to the second half and there's a seven minute period where it just implodes.
Mm-hmm.
Implodes for Barcelona. So in quick succession, we have the Vitinha goal, who was brilliant, by the way.
Really
good. He was absolutely sensational. Vitinha scoring. Then the Xavi red, and the Xavi red is just complete head loss because Frenkie de Jong is manhandling Zaire Emery, I think it is. It's a bad foul. He's like climbing all over him, can't get near the ball, frustrated. And then Xavi just kicks over like something in the technical area. And the official's like, hey, come on, Xavi's out of here.
I know you don't really want anyone kicking stuff like that, but I just found the whole sequence to be like so funny because...
It was absurd.
It was just a bit like, what are you doing? And the thing that was really funny was because obviously there was a second Barcelona coach gets sent off. And when Xavi gets sent off, he takes his coat off straight away, which I couldn't figure out why. Because I was just like, you haven't left that yet. So why are you taking it off now? And then when his assistant gets sent off, he goes to unzip his coat as well. Like it's almost like an automatic response.
Oh, I didn't see that. Amazing. I think everyone just caught the chaos. If you think about it, Frenkie lost control in midfield. Like that is such a weird nothing foul that he makes. And then he's protesting. I don't know what he's asking for. He's literally manhandling.
He thinks he gets fouled as well.
He was trying to remove the guy's shirt. He's trying to move his shirt.
But it's on like the halfway line, right? It's not in any danger. So just roll with it. I mean, I can kind of understand Barcelona's frustration a little bit because I think I actually think they should have had a penalty.
Okay.
I think the Gundogan one is a penalty. It's one of these that actually, if you were going to change football, this would be an indirect free kick in an ideal world, right? Kick in the box kind of thing because the punishment is massively outweighing the crime. I think Vitinha, he doesn't actually make a tackle.
Yeah.
But his leg clips the back of Gundogan's leg and then Gundogan goes down. And he's got the ball, he's approaching the byline, but he's still in control of the ball.
Right.
It's probably a foul.
Yes.
Even though it's not a deliberate foul. Do you know what I mean? One of those things that you're kind of like, fuck, that's so harsh, man. Like,
But lose it there.
But the thing is, I think this is where Barcelona have a point a little bit because the ref was like, he was quite trigger happy with the cards.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, yeah.
Gundogan apparently said afterwards he was asking if he's going to check it and the ref booked him, which I think is a little bit like, I mean, that's obviously taking Ilkay's word for it. Gundogan's post-match interview, I thought he was really good because he seemed to have this balance of being like, yeah, there were a couple of, like, we made a lot of errors, basically. It was their fault, really.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, before I forget, in this sequence, Gundogan strikes the base of the post, singes the post with a drive from distance. the Vitinha goals really well worked, but then, so we've got the red, and then the third element, well, the fourth element of this sort of 7 minute spell, it's the penalty, which we mentioned earlier. So this is interesting. So this is the problem with a player as quick as Dembele, right? Like, his technique is excellent, but on the rare occasions that he fluffs the first touch, he turns everything into a foot race. And this is the problem. There's almost nobody in world football who wins a foot race from zero with Dembele. And this is unfortunate what Cancelo had. Cancelo was like, oh, first touch. Oh, great. That's fine. Oh, no. And you just see the explosion. You see Dembele just leave a vapor trail as he tries to leave the box to chase this ball. He gets him and that's it. And the thing about the Mbappe penalty that's incredible, like, we've seen Mbappe, look, in World Cup finals, just drill it. Ter Stegen is asking for the ball in that corner. He's basically asking for the ball in that corner. He's like, put it in that pocket. He's not even saying in that corner. He's saying, put it in the specific place where Mbappe ends up putting it.
And Mbappe is just like, much obliged.
Oh, yeah. he punches it. There's something about the precision of a penalty like this. I just, look, there are very few strikers who can place the ball in a spot. Like, we, you know, there are strikers who leather it, whatever, but Mbappe, it feels like when he hits that penalty, that particular one. Actually, you know, like late era Messi, you know, like Messi had a period where Messi was actually missing a few penalties mid-career. Mm. And then in the World Cup final, no, in the World Cup, I was at quarters against the Netherlands, he hits one that's so good, it's basically like a crossover. Like, you've got a massive keeper and he just punches it. Gorgeous penalty. And actually, I think, look, and this is a shout out to Luis Enrique for going with that configuration, for playing Barcola out wide and Mbappe through the middle, because both tactical choices were absolutely rewarded. The talk of, Mbappe can't play through the middle. Yeah, he can.
Yeah, but he actually, can when he drifts as well. He can when also, he... I think he can play in the middle in this three.
Can I be honest with you as well?
He couldn't play in the middle with like Neymar and Messi.
Can I be brutal as well? You've got a coach that actually gives you orders. You can't play through the middle. He could have done it. He could have done it with Messi and Neymar as well. The problem is he did not have a coach of the gravitas. I don't think Poch could give orders like Luis Enrique give orders. I think
Enrique comes in and be like, shall I tell you what I told like Neymar and Messi in, you know,
the last time? Yeah, the last time around. Yeah, the last time around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Luis Enrique is the one person. Actually, yeah, this is, I wish I'd seen him coach like when those two were there at their sort of peak self-indulgence, because I think he would have gone in there and be like, actually, I'm not picking any of them. Can you imagine? They go to the training ground and their fobs aren't working. They're like, what's up? No, you're all dropped. What? They're all sitting, in the cafe across from the stadium going, yeah, we're not going in today.
No answer. Luis Enrique's on Twitch.
But yeah, so, but listen, shout out to PSG, because then they really imposed match control, like the press in midfield. I mean, they were a player up, but the way they maximize that advantage. And look, they're such, I've said this before, they're just a team, Ryan. Mm-hmm. And they played some great football. Typified by the way they broke for the final goal. So even though the final goal was a couple of weeks ago, they got lucky. The way they countered, there was such a certainty. Like, you said this before on Stadio, like, square pegs, square holes, right? Just everyone in the slots. But, and it's so obvious.
Well, it's the Radiohead method. Just everything in its right place.
In its right place, yeah.
That's all you need.
But this genuinely a PSG team that I enjoy watching. And there were, look, even with 11 players, man, I don't think Barcelona are winning this. It's just PSG.
No, I don't. I think over the, I think PSG were too, well, actually, we have a few questions on this, right? Mm, so, Ruri Barlow, Shasta Ruri.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
And the Football España crew. He said, how good are Barcelona? My main takeaway from watching these games is that nobody seems to agree on the level of talent or expectations. Are quarterfinals par for the course? I think this is a good point, because I think that Barcelona have kind of been hard to assess, I think, for a long time, because they've kind of been a bit of a mixed bag, or what, a lot of a mixed bag of a clash of eras, a clash of reputations, a clash of trajectories in terms of players and all of this stuff, and also a mash of player profile.
Mm.
Tactics, everything. To answer Ruri's question, I think that I think quarterfinal is actually more than par for the course.
Mm, I think that's right.
In this competition, I think quarterfinals for them, especially against PSG, I think is the maximum that you could probably have expected out of this Barcelona side at the moment, especially with Balde out and Gavi out, because I think that who have been the players who have really stepped up for Barcelona this season. It's the youngsters. Pau Cabarsí has been like playing above the level of what you would expect a 17-year-old centre-back to play. Lamine Yamal is so young that half the tweets are how good he is, half the tweets are just, you know, he wasn't born when.
Two youngest players ever to start Champions League quarterfinal, ever.
Exactly. Incredible.
Ever.
You know, Pedri's been injured, Gavi is injured. That's they're huge misses. Mm. Fermín López, I think, has been really good when he's come in. You've had all of these young players. He was actually quite unlucky for the second Mbappe goal because it kind of, I think it hits him on the backside.
Yeah, he was really unlucky. Yeah. A couple deflections, yeah.
But the real signs of encouragement are the youngsters. And there's talk of Rafa Márquez being the next coach. Admittedly, haven't watched a huge amount of Barca B this year, but he's not going to cost them a huge amount of money.
He'll be working with young. He's been working with young players, and they're the core of what Barcelona are going to build.
Coming from Barca B and going into that, he will have no problem moving out the elder players who aren't really doing it. You know, Barcelona have got such a heavy hangover from this kind of weird transfer period that they just need to move a load of these older players on.
Yes.
Focus on the youth as much as possible. Be smart, protect them, set realistic expectations and let them develop because they're really good.
Yeah.
There's too much going on at the moment. I think that the responsibility, İlkay Gundogan has only been there this season.
Right.
He shouldn't be being a statesman for Barcelona. He's not been there. You know what I mean? And they don't have much of that at the moment. You know, Ter Stegen's probably the only one. They don't have like a Piqué, a Xavi, an Iniesta. You know, probably the only one that comes close is Sergi Roberto. But there's a distinct like kind of lack of a core leadership group, I think. Actually, it should be Xavi. And Xavi, I think, has been, again, probably not quite as bad, but not really as good as you would expect a Barcelona manager to be in this.
Exactly
period.
This. He's shown why he should be leaving. Absolutely, he's shown why he should be leaving. Maybe he would have been better served doing an Arteta and working really, really closely with someone who was accomplished, because then you iron out the cracks. You lose those, you lose that in discipline when you're on the side. When you're next to someone up close, you don't lose it like you lost it for the Frenkie de Jong tackle. Like that you look at that and he'll look back at that and think, hopefully, well, no, maybe he won't, but hopefully this will be a milestone for him. Hopefully this will be a moment of actually, in terms of my coaching and my composure, that's a thing that should just never happen. I would only add, if you look at the league table, you might still think, hey, hang on a minute, only lost three games, still pretty good. I was like, well, the problem with that is they're winning games, a lot of it through individual talent, right? Like, but when it came, there's two key periods in this tie. Second half, not even just after the red, but second half and both second halves, when you see PSG, when PSG lost the first game, the way they exerted a certain level of midfield dominance against the 11 players. And I thought, that's the damning indictment. You've got a Xavi coach team being cooked in midfield by a very good young PSG team. And that's almost showing the way. If Xavi could run all of this back, does he make different choices? Does he put more faith in certain players? Is he a bit bolder in relation to the old guard? I mean, who knows now?
But I also wonder whether he's had...
Oh yeah, the hand is for the interference.
Yeah, the interference is there. So it's just all been a fucking mess. And, you know, I mean, you could see last night, like Gundogan was fuming with Araujo and João Cancelo.
Mm.
Those two moments kind of cost Barcelona the game, right?
Yeah.
I think PSG, you know, being two down in the tie and 11v11... I mean, even if Barcola goes on to score that chance against Araujo, I actually think Ter Stegen is in quite a good position to come out and smother that anyway.
Mm.
But we need to talk about PSG just very quickly before we wrap this bit up.
Yes.
Because Jacob Schneider from Goal is, it looks like a Moussa Okwonga burner account, I'm not going to lie. This doesn't count as a question, but time we as a footballing society gave Fabian Ruiz more love. Sensational play.
Oh, without question. Without question.
I mean, there were a lot of people who I think have been missing you on Twitter because a lot of the tweets were basically just like, is Moussa watching? What does he think of the food? Like this one from Carl Robbins. Forget the football result. Who wins in a food-off, Barcelona or Paris?
Barcelona, come on.
Oh, you are a braver man than I.
Well, actually, no. Actually, no. Let's go there. No, can I be real? Barcelona against inner Paris, Barcelona. Barcelona against outer Paris, Paris. The suburbs. Now they cook. There it is. Come for me.
I don't discriminate against foods. I appreciate all food.
Can I say, anyone that disagrees with me vigorously, please send cooked samples to an address I'll provide.
No, don't send. Right, let's wrap up on this game. So Barcelona won, PSG 4, PSG going through 6-4 on aggregate, and they will face Borussia Dortmund, who we will talk about next.
We will.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Man, listen, I rarely get things right, but I called it.
You did call it. You absolutely nailed it, dude. You nailed it. Even to the extent that you watched this game as your primary game the other day because you knew, you had a feeling.
No, I didn't. I watched both. I was dual screening. Dual screened, which was really great, actually, because the game seemed to take turns in the moments of drama. Anyway, Dortmund 4, Atleti 2, Dortmund going through 5-4 in aggregate. This was a side that were 2-0 down in the Metropolitano.
They were, dude. And they ended that tie. Do you know what? They ended... There's something about themes here. So Marcel Sabitzer, who had a fantastic weekend against Gladbach, scored a couple there. It was very much Dortmund beginning this tie with the energy they ended the last one. Mm. And Sabitzer beginning this tie with the energy he ended the Gladbach game.
Should have put him 1-0 up in what?
Listen.
Was it 100 seconds?
Yeah, like they came in hot. Dortmund came in. Sabitzer and Dortmund came in hot.
Cross came in. He takes a touch, basically. He just should have took a touch. He should have hit it first time. Hits the first time. Dortmund 1-0 up.
But his energy was like
2 minutes.
I'll be back for you. Wait there, Atleti.
He was so like focused that even when Nicholas Fulkrug put his arm around him for the celebration, he kind of like took his hand off. He's like, get up.
None of this. No, the job is not done.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a moment here. You know how like there's this whole thing about like constantly there was this time of like Alvaro Morata, it will happen and one day he'll go on that run. When he misses this chance, and it's unfair to make this comparison. Remember when Griezmann was lights out in 2016 and they made that run to the final and he was like just, with the exception of Messi, best player on the planet, like maybe whatever. Mm. Him, Messi and Ronaldo were up in that three because he was that good. Griezmann going through 1-on-1 against Neuer in the Allianz and slotting in the corner. I just felt that immediate contrast with Morata going through at this stage and missing this chance at 2-1 and floating it wide. And you see the look on Simeone's face. And it's that moment of, it's not the moment, but my God, it's a moment. Man, like,
yeah.
You know, to me, I don't want to, like, this sounds mean, but you've got a back five, you've got three across the middle, and you've got Griezmann Morata at front, and those chances are not going to be commonplace in that context. And you just...
I think this is where Simeone deserves some credit, but which I think we'll get onto. But let's talk about because the goals first before we get onto the Morata coming off, because I was going to talk about the sub. Mm. But Morata, you know, getting hooked at half-time.
Mm. Big shout.
Dortmund's goals, a pair of them, came within really quick succession, which I thought was quite good. Mm. How Dortmund just hit Atleti with two kind of 1-2 punches.
Yes.
Julian Brandt taking the lead for Dortmund on the
he
night.
Was superb, my God. Yeah, he was.
Julian Brandt was so good. Mats Hummels rolling back the years with an absolutely unbelievable, just flicked outside, living up to his Instagram name. Alsenrist.
Maybe the pass of the night.
Yeah, because the funny thing was, it didn't look like, you know, when people do the outside of the foot thing, usually they kind of have a bit of a, there's a bit of, they have to generate a bit of momentum because it's, yeah, it's awkward. Matt's was almost just a bit like, it was more of, it looked like a flick.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah,
quite weird. It did,
yeah, yeah.
Julian Brandt with a great touch, took it down. Angle's really tight, but just a, yes, really good finish. He can do this with both feet, which I think.
The one-on-one with Witzel as well.
Oh.
Ice dancing with Witzel.
Putting Dorman ahead, place goes wild. And then a few minutes later, Sancho passed to Sabitzer. Sabitzer kind of,
oh,
feeds.
The back heel's gorgeous. That the cut. This is just classic. The way Sabitzer just cuts and just bombs into the space, Martin. I absolutely love this goal.
And just a great finish from Martin.
Clean. Yeah.
His first goal at home.
Bobak doesn't get near it, yeah.
His first goal at home for Dortmund. First goal in the stadium.
It must have been loud in there. I don't know if it was like a decibel counter, but that sounded.
And when Dortmund do this, Dortmund have a habit, I think, of kind of doing this where they'll, or, you know, like, do you remember the goal we always go on about, the Haaland against PSG goal?
Yes, yes.
Actually, that's just reminded me, I completely forgot to shout out the noise that Dembele's goal made against Barca.
Oh, yes.
The net was just like, and also the fact that he's scored 3 goals for PSG, 2 of them scored against Barca, and both of those were angry goals.
Yeah, furious goals.
Furious goals. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well. Anyway, back to this game. So Dortmund go in 2-0 at halftime and 3-2 up in the tie. And then Diego Simeone brings on Correa, which I think is such a good substitution because Correa, yes, wreaked absolute havoc for 20 minutes in the second half. Like, he was just, I mean,
he was basically playing two positions. He was playing two positions.
Felt like he was playing four. He went like, you know when Neo goes all blurry in the Matrix?
Yeah, there's like 5 of
just
him.
Just a bit,
yeah,
like, really, really busy. Mats Hummels, I think, is really unlucky for the own goal. And
yeah,
you could tell by the reaction, everyone's just like, ah, shit, one of those. But Correa has that one-on-one where he just slides past the post. And then his goal.
That was actually, to be honest, low-key, that was a better chance than the Morata one. In a weird way, it was a worse miss.
Scored.
It was a worse miss. Yep. He should have scored. But then again, this is the thing. It was the way he came back after it.
Well, yeah, this is the thing about Correa. It's like he's completely unaffected by it.
Right, right.
Like, his goal, actually, it reminded me of, like, you know, you talked about the Julian Alvarez goal in the World Cup where it was almost like he was running downhill.
Yes.
This felt like that. This felt like,
yes, yes.
This felt like kind of watching one of those, you know, those cheese runs where people roll down the hill.
Yes.
Because it was just like, it was just fucking chaos. And it was only going one direction, you know,
yeah.
Like.
He's like, he tries to assist it and he's like, screw it, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
Rips it
and he has one shot, bounces back, and he hits it again.
Crosses it
right
in
the top, and then
comes back left foot, and then like rips it. And the composure for the third, because very often you see someone sky the follow up.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, at that point, I really worried for Dortmund.
Mm.
You know, Atleti 4-3 up in the tie, and I was a bit like, ah, oh, shit, is this it? And then Sabitzer.
But Brandt. It was Brandt.
Oh,
like that.
Oh, it was Julian.
No, no, but not just in terms of his energy, the way he, sorry to throw it back to Red Star, you know, after, it reminded me of like Robert Prosinecki. Like when you have that player that like just slows, everyone else is charging about, but they're just stepping off the play, looking up and just poking the ball through gaps, pushing it and getting some control back. And then, you know, Sabitzer then, that is the platform, I think.
We talked about Julian Brandt doing this, though, haven't we? Because his skill set is so broad. He's a really big guy, very physical as well, but very technical, has the ability to play at different tempos and, you know, can do set pieces, can slow the game down, can speed the game up, can drive. I think he's really underrated still, Julian Brandt.
I think so.
Yeah.
Like, I think, so... Brandt continues working his magic, intensifies his magic, and then Sabitzer just goes full Super Saiyan and is like, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving this tournament. I'm not effing leaving.
No.
Gets in this cross for the Füllkrug header is art. The cross is art, the header. And the way that Oblak looks back at that as it floats into the corner and he's just like, no, I'm having no parts of that. There's those two moments in this game where Oblak looks genuinely just bereft for the Martin goal where it's just beyond him because it's worked so well and he just can't get on the angle and the Füllkrug header. The Füllkrug header is just
absolutely... It is so good.
It's so classic. It's so classic.
I have a real soft spot for a headed goal where someone runs across the defender, but it's still like so far in front of the front post.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's such a hard skill as well. And it's just, it's one of those things where I think it's because it's timing.
Mm.
I know so much of football is timing, but there's something specific about that.
Yes.
That just, it relies purely on timing. You'd let the pace of the ball and you meet it at the same time. And it's like, it kind of, we've just been watching three body problem, right?
Yes.
It's like the goal equivalent of that solution where you're using these nuclear blasts to propel a thing into space.
Yes, yes, nuclear propulsion.
That kind of hell, said, header is very much like
nuclear. Powered by nuclear propulsion.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
I love that.
Perfect, that's the energy perfect. That it gives me though. It does. It's just great. It was such a great goal.
You know, it was Gerrard's header in the Champions League final.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that. Yeah. It's that same level, that trajectory of where you do it. And what you look, the header is so good that like you're so focused on the angle that you're not looking at the goal when you head it. And then you have to stop and admire your artwork. So everyone's turning. That's the best thing. This would make it, I mean, a sports photographer's dream. Oh. Because at the moment the ball enters the net, both striker and goalkeeper, their eyes are aligned on it.
Yeah.
It's an
so
absolute.
So good, man.
Ah, love it.
So
love
good.
It.
And then 3 minutes later, Sabitzer himself scores the crucial goal.
That
which
is a gorgeous
again,
strike.
Just, what
some
strike.
Will criticise Oblak a little, but it goes to a crowd, first of all. Yeah. The angle on it is so good. The angle on the strike is so good. It was almost as good as the Vitinha strike in the other tie. Mm. Low across the keeper. It goes, he gets like sort of top hand to it, Oblak, but it's not enough to keep it out. And at that point, Dortmund, I think they could have got maybe another one.
Well, Füllkrug goes through, has that great shot, like breakthrough.
Oblak, good save.
And Sabitzer has one similar.
And it gets parried over, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the deflection, sorry. Yeah, it was not similar
Dortmund,
at all.
But Dortmund were peppering it. They were like...
That place on European nights is just, you know, it's been tough in the league this season. Mm. They've been disappointing. They've underperformed. There's been a lot of criticism of Terzic in terms of tactical stuff. I think they've got a little bit better since the break, just in moments. And I think that's some of that is down to the signings, you know, bringing in Sancho, bringing in Maarten. And I think also some of that is down to Bender and Schein coming in.
Can we be briefly, in Dortmund's brief defense? Let's just look at the league table very briefly. They are in a class, that top five is in a class by themselves. They're 40. So Dortmund are 14 points clear of Eintracht, who are in sixth.
Yeah.
If you look at that actual top five, Leverkusen, Bayern, Stuttgart, Leipzig, Dortmund, those clubs have all had good seasons. Like RB Leipzig have played some really good football. They scored 67 times. I think Dortmund, they've all conceded around the same kind of goal. So Bayern, Stuttgart, RB Leipzig and Dortmund have all conceded about between 34 and 36 goals. And then Leverkusen, the outlier. And all of that is to say, actually, the real criticism of Dortmund would be, I think, the goal scoring. Actually,
yeah, they're drawn to, and it's cost them too many draws.
It's the goal scoring. It's the goal scoring. Actually, that's a very, very rough and ready. But
yeah,
they have been subpar. But the subpar things are fixable.
They're fixable. So. Very,
and actually, this is why I love the Champions League for Edin Terzic and Dortmund, because it gives you a chance to just discard the league and focus on the stuff that's actually working for you. And that's what makes them a dangerous proposition. Like Dortmund PSG semi is a dream semi for Dortmund. Not because they're favourites, they're not, but because
they played them in the group.
It's absolutely within their remit. And in the group, Dortmund showed us something.
Yeah,
really showed us something. Yeah.
I mean, the draw suited both of them in the second game at the Westfalen. Dortmund lost in Paris. I think now they may still lose in Paris. I think that they might be a little bit more street smart this time around.
I think so.
Dortmund have the home leg, which is a shame, actually. It would be good if they had the second leg at home. But if they can take a lead to Paris...
Still fancy PSG there just because of...
Yeah, me too.
...where they're playing and also because of the configuration of ties. But that is a good... That's a good matchup for them, I would say.
But I mean, whether they get through that or not, the fact that they've got to the Champions League semi-finals for the first time since they went to the final in 2013, unbelievable for Dortmund. And I think Terzic does deserve a lot of credit there because they have been really good in Europe. you know, they beat Newcastle twice.
Yeah.
They got out of that group, which was a tough group, man. Like,
dude, yeah, brutal.
A very, very tough group. And that no one really
Dortmund,
wants to
Milan,
go.
No Newcastle, one, PSG. Horrible.
No
horrible.
One wants to go to the Westfalen. That's the thing. And I think they were just, yeah, they were good, man. They were really, really good. We had a couple of questions. Hez says, this has to be a contender for Stadio's most chaotic quarterfinals of the year. Is it weird to say Marquinhos delivered a man of the match performance and the Dortmund Atletico game was the more impressive of both?
Not weird.
I can't pick favourites.
And I'm straight in there making tips.
I love all my quarterfinal children the same.
Critiquing everyone's food, going in and out. I'm straight in there. Marquinhos needed that. Marquinhos needed that, to be honest.
He was really good.
Yeah, I think just because I think he had a, you know, one or two difficult campaigns recently in Champions League. So great for him. Dortmund Atletico, the more impressive of the two? Oh, I don't know. I can't say that, Ryan, in good conscience. I can't. Not with the absolute banger that like PSG Barcelona gave us.
They were all great. I mean, we had a 6-4 in aggregate and we had a 5-4 in aggregate.
If someone said to us, oh, by the way, these games are dull by comparison with the second legs, we'd be like, no way.
Well, this brings me on to something that I wanted to talk about, but I might save it for tomorrow because there are a lot of people being, you know, talking about like, oh my God, this is the last year it's going to be like this. I mean, the knockouts are going to still be in the knockouts, right? It's just depending on who's going to be there. But I actually think that, I think we've all missed a trick here if we were going to reform the Champions League.
What's that?
Well, just two-leg knockout. Two-leg knockout.
All the way through.
All the way through.
I mean,
seed teams from the beginning. So you can still, if you want, try and give the big teams a path through. But two-leg knockouts, what the Champions League definitely didn't need was more group games.
That's true. I mean, we know it's a money spinner. But look, I've said this before.
Yeah.
I haven't said this in a while, but you cannot spell champions without chaos. And this is the UEFA Chaos League in its full form.
I might write an essay about how actually the complete political breakdown of Europe was actually caused. You can actually trace it back to when the Champions League had two group stages.
The change. The butterfly effect. Yep. If we proposed that as a joint academic study, we'd be the only academics where we'd walk into the lecture hall the first day, they'd be like, get out of here. Don't even sit down.
We would propose it. We would try and take it to all of these like journals and we'd end up just putting it on the Stadio site because no one would take it. Anyway, I reckon that'll do us, huh?
Yes. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
What a night of Champions League football.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Got to drop my Arsenal friends a line and just wish them good luck, actually. Obviously, I extend that to you as well. But and actually, I was annoyed at first. I was like, oh no, I'm annoyed at the way that like, the tie is split and the draw is split. So you've got, and actually, I'm not now. I feel like we've ended up with exactly the Champions League we were meant to.
The thing that you got to accept about the Champions League, 99% of the time, you're going to go out at some stage.
This is it.
I'm just happy to be there.
How are you feeling about tonight?
Just not thinking about it.
Yeah, smart. That's wise.
I'll deal with it when it happens. I'm not going to...
No, that's fair. That's smart.
I'm more confident than I was like the last time Arsenal went to the Allianz, put it that way.
No, and that's fair. That's absolutely fair.
I very much hope to be here this time tomorrow talking about Arsenal going through.
Yes.
All right,
wise
everyone.
Words, wise moderation.
We're going to leave it there for today. Don't forget to check Wrighty's house after the buying game. It'll be up very, very late European time, but it'll still be up. And Stadio will be back tomorrow. And don't forget to check the Stadio Archers players on Spotify. Today we are playing out. It's kind of like a disco classic, this. I'm surprised we haven't played out on it before. Lee Alfred, a track title fitting of Tuesday night's Champions League action. Rocking, popping, full tilting.
Yeah. This should have been actually the opening music instead of the classical, because it would put everyone in the mood.
All right, everyone. Much love. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
See you then.
said, oh, Mr. B, it's